Do you want to learn how not to get injured, how to prevent injuries? This is the podcast episode for you. Welcome to the Fear Being Average podcast, episode number 46 of the Health, Fitness, and Performance series. Today we look at just that, how to prevent injuries before they occur and how to get your body to a bulletproof version of itself. So incredibly important. Today we're going to take a look at the best exercises, in my estimation, things that I have learned over practical experience, taking on my ultra strength endurance record first projects that I've used extensively to make sure my body was capable to handle the load and demand and keep my body in a place where it can continue with that stress and not get injured. And also, these are the things I use with my clients. I help them get stronger with these exercises, foundational movement patterns that we're going to highlight today to make sure that you can add them and implement them into your daily routine. And that way you're spending less time on the sidelines, more time in the gym, getting stronger, becoming more resilient, and enjoying a more improved quality of life through fitness and health. All right, everybody, be sure to subscribe to the podcast, share the podcast, rate the podcast, and most importantly, enjoy today's podcast. All right, so this is going to be a fun episode today because we're going to be talking about some exercises that may even be a little bit controversial to some individuals listening to this, but it's a really important episode because so often we have these pains, maybe these deficits in our movement mechanics or how our body functions. We go to the doctor as prescribed, and they say, stop doing X, stop doing Y, right? Typically, that results in, if there's a pain or an injury, it's stop moving, it's stop working out, it's rest and recover and don't lift this and don't perform that exercise and stop doing that. And it's crazy to me that the solution would be to stop doing something. Like, that's not a solution, that's a band-aid, right? It's like saying if I walk and I have pain, to stop walking. It's like, well, no, that's horrible advice. Yeah, the pain's gonna go away if I stop walking, but that's not identifying the root cause of the issue, and it's probably going to limit and actually hinder my quality of life. Like, I don't want to stop doing things because I have pain or because there's some sort of imbalance. Like, well, I want to find out where that pain's coming from. I want to find out where that weakness is coming from, and I want to rectify. Like, there's so many resources and things available, whether it be Western medicine, Eastern medicine, and resources in terms of what to do to strengthen your body and mind, that there's really no reason to have to stop doing something unless there's some dramatic aspect of something that happened to you, right? Like, some things are just outside of our control to a certain degree, but in most cases, 9.5 times out of 10, there's a practical solution that doesn't involve giving up something. So we need to do a much better job of addressing the root cause and getting our body back to a place where we can do things in a safe, controlled manner and do it where our body actually becomes more resilient, more durable, and stronger. And this is why I advocate exercise every single day. And that shouldn't scare you. If it does scare you, maybe you need to rethink and reframe what exercise means to you. But exercise is a healthy endeavor. It doesn't mean hard, intense exercise. Doesn't mean a lot of sweat or high intensity or that your body feels weak and tight and drained. No, we're looking for exercise that re-energizes the body, stimulates the body, helps bulletproof the body, and does all the things that we talk about in terms of benefiting our mindset and our spirituality and our emotional well-being. So we want to make sure that we're not just throwing things aside because we've had one opinion based on an individual that doesn't even have expertise in that particular field. And sometimes we give way too much weight to people with DR in front of their last name or that they have PhDs. They have an extensive repertoire of their particular education. That doesn't mean they're experts when it comes to strength training or building muscle. Look at them. Are they people that have done that for themselves? No, they've had very limited amount of time and knowledge in those spaces. and they've maybe had a semester, if that, on nutrition, and I don't even know if they've had semester on strength training, but they definitely don't know how to do it, and we're being prescribed really ill-informed, poor strategies that aren't helping us and that are taking things that we could actually enjoy and enhance the quality of our life away. So today we're going to talk about some exercises, the best exercises in my opinion, that are going to actually help you prevent injuries. Yes, any exercise done poorly can actually increase the injury rate. I can do a bicep curl. I can do a lying leg extension or a hamstring curl or a push-up and hurt myself, right? If I don't have the stability, the control, and the strength and the connection to what I'm doing, any movement can hurt myself, so or hurt me, and can actually limit the potential that I get out of it. So we need to understand that it's not the exercise, it's who's performing the exercise and at what capacity that is going to determine if it's done appropriately or if it's potentially going to hurt them. But again, doing it the right way with the proper eye, these exercises that we're going to lay out are going to be incredibly helpful. And again, these are the best exercises in my personal and professional opinion that are going to help get you guys extremely strong, very resilient, and prevent you from being sidelined over and over and over, which so many people are, right? And it prevents people and takes them out of a modality that's incredibly fulfilling and stimulating. And it even creates a little bit of concern around such a useful medicine. Like exercise 100% is the best medicine in the world for your mental health, your physical health, longevity, well-being. It's incredible. It really is. If we could bottle up exercise and working out and put it into a pill, we would solve so many of the world's problems. Unfortunately, that's not the case. We have to actively go out. And I don't even want to say unfortunately. I think it's beneficial because so much of the fulfillment that comes from exercising and the mental well-being and the physical and the emotional and the spiritual is the act of pursuing something, right? It's the act, it's the process, the journey that is incredibly fulfilling and rewarding. So going off that, let's go back into the exercises that are going to prevent injuries the greatest, and they'll actually have a great return on you building strength and seeing your physique improve as well. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand. The exercises that limit your potential of injury are also really effective at building muscle and building strength and building connection, obviously, right? Like they kind of go hand in hand because the more muscle, the more connection, the more strength you have, the less likely you are to be injured. So they go hand in hand, so you're getting a double win on that one. So let's jump into it. The first one, we're going to go right out of the gate with a controversial one for people that don't know working out and don't know exercise and that have a misinformed understanding of exercise. The deadlift. Yes, the deadlift, one of the big five lifts that you can do. And the big five typically categorized as the deadlift, the squat, the row, the horizontal press, i.e. the bench press, and the vertical press, which is the overhead military press. And you can throw in other movements like the power clean and the pull-up and other ones that are really useful, but typically the big five are the ones I just described, and the deadlift being possibly the king or queen of that situation. I would probably put the squat as the king and deadlift right behind. If not, you could probably argue maybe even better than the squat, but definitely in a major exercise that so many people avoid doing because they end up getting hurt doing it, or that they're scared of doing it because they've heard horror stories and they don't have the connection. So let's paint the picture here. To do these movements, you do want to have a sound structure. You want to use appropriate weight. We want to be in control of the movement. So I can do a deadlift with zero weight, right? I can still perform the movement, the mechanics of a deadlift. I can do it with 5 pounds and 10 pounds. And I can start doing it with a bar and I can start adding load. So there's a way to do it in an intelligent manner. I can do a deadlift with a band, right? It's about really learning the form and connection of the movement. Why is the deadlift so damn useful? Why is it one of the best exercises you can do to prevent injuries? For one, it is one of the most loadable exercises you can do, meaning you can load it with the most amount of weight. It is flat out the exercise you can load the most, right? Some people have a crazy squat and maybe they can squat more than deadlift, but typically the deadlift is the exercise in the gym that you'll be able to lift the most amount of weight on. You can't match that movement. So that's incredible right there. That is such a benefit. If you can pick a movement where you can load the most amount of weight onto it, that is going to give you the greatest overall absolute strength potential. So your body is going to have the greatest opportunity to have an incredible firing rate and muscle fiber recruitment based on how much load you can move with a particular exercise. And the deadlift is phenomenal for that. So the more load you can lift, this is why free weights are so beneficial for so many, is that you can just really load that movement up. So the deadlift with the load being one, you can also really engage the entire body. That is why it is a multi-joint compound movement. There is so much going on. You are going to have an incredible amount of grip strength involved. You're going to have a lot of lat engagement. You are going to have to brace your core. You're going to have to have a lot of tension in the hips, in the glutes. You're going to have a lot of engagement through the lower back, the upper back, the traps, the forearms, the biceps, the delts, the hamstrings. Literally, it is a full body movement. So beneficial. So many of those things are directly related to limiting the potential of all-cause mortality, grip strength being one of them. So that's great. So not only are we talking about preventing injuries, but preventing or at least pushing away death for now. So that's a benefit. But it's a movement that is so beneficial to building the structure of the human body up, right? There's so much going on there. You can't argue with me on the fact that it does so much right there. It involves so many muscles. It involves an entire full body engagement to perform the movement effectively, especially when the load starts increasing, or we just kind of create a greater systemic tension through how we set the body up with the movement, that this is going to be incredibly useful in keeping you guys healthy and durable and resilient. I use this analogy with a lot of people that I talk to. If I can deadlift appropriately 400 to 450 pounds, for example, or 500 pounds even, compared to the person that can only deadlift 100 pounds, I definitely have a more resilient body to external load. I'm able to put my body in a position where it lifts a lot of weight and it's more protected compared to the person that can only deadlift 100 pounds or 200 pounds or 300 pounds. That's a given. It's very objective, right? The numbers are right there. So I'm going to have a very sturdy, durable back. And now, of course, when we look at the extremes of someone that strength trains and deadlifts a lot of weight compared to someone who never strength trains or deadlifts, you know, there's going to be way more potential for that individual that doesn't strength train to lift something up around the house and hurt themselves compared to me, because now I've built a structure. I built a really strong structure of hips and glutes and hamstrings and lower back and spinal erectors and upper back and grip strength. I'm going to have a sound structure for the most part that, yes, I might hurt myself doing a rotational thing, but let's just talk about us working in the sagittal plane, up and down or forward and back. I'm going to be more structurally sound than the other person. So there's less potential of me getting injured. Even when I'm doing a dynamic movement, I have a stronger, more built up structure. So that is going to behoove me when I lift and do other things and other movements, right? So we need to keep that in consideration, that the deadlift is so incredibly useful to building up the back, to engaging the posterior chain, right? It's a pull movement with the hip flexion and the hip extension at the lockout. It's doing so much for the body that you can't argue that it's not one of the best, if not the best, exercise in the world. Yet, however, a lot of people avoid this movement because they don't know how to train it, they've never done it, or they've been told not to, or they've seen horror stories. So again, the key is learn how to do this movement properly, right? A lot of resources online, tons of books. I'm looking at one right now in my house called Starting Strength by Mark Ripito. Goes over all the big foundational movements I talked about in the Big Five and does a detailed description and write-up of each one of those movements. Really detailed. So if you want to learn how to deadlift, read that book. Or YouTube it. Go online. Tons of resources. Hit me up. Right? There's endless resources how to do that movement properly, and you can start lighter. Be intelligent with it. Use appropriate weight. And with that, slowly but surely, your back is going to get stronger, especially if you do it right and you're engaging the right muscles. So again, the idea and the prescription of not to deadlift or being scared to deadlift is wrong. Now, doing it the wrong way, yes, there is a higher risk, which is why I get there is a bit of hesitancy, because there's a massively high reward, but there is a higher risk than, let's just say, a bicep curl. You know, if I mess up a bicep curl and I use poor form, yeah, there's not as much potential of damage to the body compared to a poorly done deadlift. So I get that. But at the same time, you can't compare the benefit of a deadlift to the benefit of a bicep curl. So there's a massive discrepancy in the reward aspect of it. And if you're smart with it and you don't push your body too far, right, and you do it the right way, you're not going to get hurt. So it's all about intention. It's all about connection. It's all about control. And then the deadlift can be one of the best movements you add to your repertoire. And there's lots of versions. You can do dumbbell deadlifts. You can do single leg deadlifts. You can do conventional. You can do sumo. You can do trap bar, which I love because it really sets you up in a really good strong position. Do Romanian deadlifts, right? You can do rack pulls from a higher height even. So if your mobility is something that you're scared about, you can slowly but surely start reducing the height. And you can start from a higher position, maybe just below the knees, and pull from there. You know, there's so many different ways to introduce the deadlift that I think we have a misconception of the deadlift as an exercise and how to program it. Lots of different ways, so valuable, but that's why it's number one. And if anyone wants to argue this, hit me up, DM me. I'd love to even have you on, do a podcast episode against you about why the deadlift is a really good exercise. Because trust me, I'm not saying you can't get hurt doing the deadlift, but we're talking about preventing injuries. And if you do the deadlift properly and you're able to, over time, add load and get really good at it, it is one of the best exercises to build a durable, resilient, strong, healthy body. Okay, moving on. We're going to go into sticking with the posterior chain here. I love these exercises. The glute ham raise, glute ham developer, GHD, and back extension. I'm going to pair those two together because they are similar, right? A glute ham raise just involves a little bit more range of motion compared to a typical traditional back extension. If you don't know what these movements look like, simply YouTube them, guys. GHR, glute ham raise, or type in back extensions and you will see what those movements are. They're done on a glute ham developer, typically. There's also a 45 degree, you know, back extension machine that you guys can use for back extensions. But both these movements are incredible at building up a sound, strong posterior chain. So lots of development in the hamstrings, lots of development in the glutes, posterior chain, obviously, and even like around the hips and the trunk, right? And then the low back, very important. So these movements are typically accessory movements. They're assistant movements. So they're movements that you would complement your big foundational, you know, compound movements with, and you can add to your routine for typically higher volume type sets. So anywhere between, you know, 10 to 20 reps. I've even done some 30 set, you know, back extensions, but glute ham raises, I'm usually around that, you know, 3x10, 3x15, and I can load it a little bit too. Now, it's a movement that could even use a little bit of assistance. It's a hard movement, the glute ham raise, where back extension is a little bit more practical for the majority of the audience listening to this. But those two movements are something you guys should throw into your routine 2-3 times a week. You know, it's never going to harm you to do more accessory hamstring and glute and low back work. Like, those movements are so important, and they translate. This is a good you know, transition. They translate really well to the deadlift. So if you want your deadlift to increase, typically when deadlifts, you know, hit plateaus, which most people don't have to worry about, you know, they don't train, they haven't trained long enough or hard enough to really hit a plateau. But usually it's coming from like a weak point, whether it's the lockout is usually kind of the glutes. And then when you're pulling from the ground, a lot of times it's the connection, you know, of the hamstrings. I might have that backwards, and I'm pretty sure that's it. And definitely glutes and hamstrings are a weak point, or low back for people, right? So even pulling off the ground, the low back can be a little bit tight or weak or vulnerable. And these movements will actually help assist and strengthen those muscles, obviously, right? So it will actually translate really well to improving your deadlift, even without even doing the deadlift. So that's kind of cool, right? So I don't always recommend people just hammer the deadlift all the time because it is so demanding on the body. So you want to throw in more exercises that are complementary to these big movements and that build up a more bulletproof foundation. And glute ham raises, back extensions, something I've just, ironically, guys, I've been doing this for a long time. They are things that I've just really added into my routine over the last year and a half. You know, doing a lot more research on, you know, when I do these long strength endurance ultra projects, you know, I really had to focus in on, okay, like, how do I build up my body to an incredible, you know, degree of durability. Like, I can't afford to get injured. I can't afford to have my structure break down. And if you know, you didn't follow my summer, you know, Great Canadian Record Project challenge of the 10 half Ironmans and the 50,000 pounds of lifting at 1.5 times my body weight, I was doing almost 90 deadlifts per day at 255 pounds, so 1.5 times my body weight after each half Ironman. So there's a lot of opportunity for breakdown, structural breakdown, which I couldn't afford because the project wouldn't have been successful if I couldn't deadlift the weight, or if I started affecting my back squat and my back was starting to give out, or you know, my structure and core wasn't engaged, or my core was getting beat up. That those movements I'd have a really hard time performing if my structure broke down, if not couldn't perform them at all. So I had to make sure that my posterior chain was thriving, that I had an incredible amount of resiliency through the hamstrings and the glutes and the you know, lower back and hips and core. And these two movements were staples of what I do, and I currently still throw them into my routine very often. Sometimes I even have a day where I'm just focused on like a structural foundational type workout that's built around accessory work. So in between my foundational workouts, I'll throw in things like hip extensions and back extensions and glute ham raises and reverse hypers and all these things that literally build up the lower back, the glutes and the hamstring, but are low intensity, low demand on the body. They really recruit those muscles really, really well. They're just not as complex or as fatiguing in terms of engaging the nervous system as a, you know, you would compare that to a deadlift or a back squat or overhead press or something of that nature. So two movements that are incredible, so beneficial to throw into your routine. If you don't have a glute ham raise machine, or you know, access to doing back extensions, I love movements that anything that really targets the hamstrings, isolates the hamstrings, even doing Nordic hamstring curls, which typically you would use with a partner, but you can also get machines for that, or you can kind of find something in your home where you can kind of, you're able to lock your heels underneath, and then you can kind of lower yourself down and then push yourself back up. It replicates the glute ham raise to a certain degree. Really beneficial, much harder exercise to perform. Lots of engagement with the hamstrings, but definitely these two movements and these two exercises, throw them into your routine if you want to have a bulletproof foundation. Okay, guys, number three, we're looking at farmer carry. So many variations of the farmer carry. You know, we're going to keep it nice and simple in terms of focusing on, you know, a typical farmer carry where you have two dumbbells or a set of weights to the side of your body and you walk. Or you can do a suitcase carry where you have one dumbbell next to your side, creating a little bit of, you know, offset work where one side is going to have to compensate for the load. But farmer carry is such a beneficial movement, almost to comparable to deadlift in terms of how much is going on. A lot of grip work, tons of core and trunk stability and engagement, lots of glute and hamstring work, lots of, you know, shoulder and upper back and trap work being engaged with the farmer carry. Such an incredible movement. I love doing a trap bar farmer carry. The cool kind of test in terms of really developing a strong farmer carry, be doing 2 times your body weight, which is a good goal to strive for if you haven't ever, you know, farmer carried some weight before, and maybe you're kind of working towards really building up a stronger foundation. If you're ever able to double your body weight and carry that for 30 seconds, that's a really good sign you're fucking strong. So that's a good goal to strive for. But yeah, farmer carry is so beneficial. Again, relatively low demand on the body, especially if we're doing just traditional dumbbell farmer carries or suitcase carries. Even though there's a lot going on and ton of engagement with the movement, you don't have to You know, there's no eccentric portion to the movement. It's an isometric, basically. You know, we're locking into one static position and walking or holding. You know, traditionally, you're going to walk with the weight just to kind of focus a little bit more on core and trunk stability as you're moving dynamically. So such a beneficial exercise. And with the no eccentric portion of it, there's not going to be, you know, a lot of opportunity for muscle damage. Just a lot of engagement, right? A lot of muscle fiber recruitment and full body central nervous system engagement, but not in an overly demanding way. So I recently added these to my dad's routine. You know, he's been working out for a really long time, kind of a fitness fanatic. And, you know, over time, the joints start hurting a little bit and the body starts kind of getting a little bit, you know, beat up, so you can't, do certain exercises. And I told him, you know, throw in some farmer carries. It's such a good exercise. It's very joint friendly, which is great, but it has an incredible transfer effect in terms of full body strengthening, especially the grip factor. I love that one. Again, there was research and studies that showed grip strength was a massive indicator of all-cause mortality. So having the ability to really hold and squeeze a weight as you walk with it, very beneficial for developing your grip, especially over time. When you get older, you start losing your strength a little bit and you start kind of losing some muscle mass. So any movements that are gonna create a higher demand of full body engagement, super beneficial to add to your routine. So farmer carries, such a big fan of. Definitely throw those into your routine. You know, carry is a foundational movement pattern that you should have in your routine every single week. Yes, every week we should be doing some form of a carry to a certain degree. Sometimes I do them on my off days, i.e. kind of like my recovery days where I do more general physical preparedness. In the summer, I did that a ton. When I was working up towards my project, I'd be doing a lot of farmer carries and sleds, which is the next thing we're going to be talking about, just to build up more work capacity, not beat the body up, but keep the body super healthy, super strong, and ready to go. So love the farmer carry. Tons of different carries too, guys. There's front rack carries, there's overhead carries. There is an advancement of how you want to advance and progress your carries depending on your capabilities. But early on, start off with the farmer carry, traditional two weights by your side and suitcase carries if you want a little bit of unilateral work, and that's gonna do you a ton of good. All right, number four, like I just mentioned, is the sled. All right, I love the sled. If you didn't listen or haven't listened to a Joe Rogan podcast recently with Ben Patrick, Mr. Knees Over Toes guy, he talks a lot about the sled and injury prevention. So such a useful tool, very similar to how the farmer carry kind of works in terms of this systemic full body engagement, obviously more lower body. You can use a sled for upper body, but traditionally you're going to find a lot more attention going towards bulletproofing the knees, the hamstrings, the glutes, the quads, the ankles, the feet, the hips. So sled work is just that's a great pairing. That's why I love them, because farmer carries a lot more upper body than the sled, and the sled a lot more lower body than the farmer carry, but they both have an aspect of upper body work, because obviously if I'm doing a sled push, for example, my arms are extending, I'm getting a little bit more engagement through the tricep, through that locked up position, shoulder. With the farmer carry, you know, we're engaging through the glutes and the hips and the hamstrings and whatnot. So they both have a lot of carryover to one another, and they kind of complement each other really, really well, which is why I love kind of assisting and pairing the two together in a workout. Such a good tool. Again, if you haven't listened to that Joe Rogan podcast, highly recommend it, because Ben Patrick, or just type in a knees over toes guy on YouTube, he talks a lot about the sled, a lot about the benefits of, you know, strengthening your tibialis and your calves and your hamstrings and your glutes and protecting your knees. And his story is remarkable in terms of a guy who wasn't all that athletic, had some serious injuries, and he started, you know, applying his method, the ATG method, and sleds are such a big part of that. And he equates him doing sleds 6 times a week, just kind of touching the muscles that we talked about, that I just mentioned, and developing, you know, foot strengthening and stability and ankle all the way through the ankle to the hip, and how beneficial that's been for longevity and the physical fitness of so many of his clients and himself, right? And he really equates this method and the sled as being one of the most underrated, undervalued tools in the gym. And I completely agree. I think it is by far one of the best single exercises that someone can do and should do. And here's the cool part. I could do sled work with an 8-year-old all the way up to a 90-year-old, and I would If I had an 8-year-old and I had a team of athletes I was training, sled, 100% in their training program. If I had a 90-year-old that came to me, we're not going to be doing a ton of backloaded back squats or a whole bunch of crazy shit that you see online. It's going to be doing a lot of sound structural strength work. The sled, I don't need to worry about her mobility or his mobility. I don't have to worry about where their strength level is. I don't have to care about where their fitness level is. There are so many ways to modify the sled for every individual, from 8 years old to 9 years old to inexperienced to fully expert experience. The sled is useful. So such a good exercise to throw in your routine, just like the farmer carry, not a lot of muscle damage. So it's a good opportunity if you're looking to add some volume to your workouts or add some work capacity that you throw the sled in. And I just built a program online. What do you call a program? It was just more of an add-on to people's routines. I'm going to throw it, you know, into Mel's routine, my girlfriend's, and it's more just sled work, and there's a progression over 10 weeks of how we, you know, progress the weight or the volume week to week. But I'm really excited for that because it's going to have, you know, myself and her doing sleds, you know, 3 to 4 times per week. And it's going to be very subtle, but I think a very dramatic shift in what happens to our bodies over that 10-week period, even though we're just adding and sprinkling the sled in there every now and then throughout the week. But I think there's going to be massive carryover. I really look forward to seeing, and not only from, you know, the advancement standpoint, but also the injury prevention standpoint. And I think that's one of the keys to smart training, is not just doing things that, you know, fix injuries, but doing things that will prevent injuries. And this is the kind of key to the podcast, is don't wait till you get hurt to start doing these things. Do them so you don't get hurt. And the sled is such a useful tool, one of my absolute favorites. Lots of different ways to use it too. You can do lateral sled drags, you can go in the frontal plane, you can do sled pushes, sled drags, you know, reverse pulls, you can do sprints with them, you can do marches, you can do pull throughs, you can do, you know, monster walks and power walks, and just a lot of different stuff. You can do a lot of upper body work with sleds as well. So love the tool, one of my favorites. If you want something nice and cheap for the summer, go buy yourself a little sled. You don't got to buy yourself a big prowler, but just a sled with a strap and harness. My God, you're going to have a blast, and your body's going to thank you for it. Okay, next one. We're looking at sprinting uphill. Oh, man, might get some pushback on this one. People say, you know, can't sprint, can't run, it's bad. For me, you know, my knees get banged up and this and that. I get injured running. Yeah, if I go tell you to go run 100 meters right now, you're probably going to pull a fucking hamstring. We don't want you doing that, right? Because when we run and we sprint, you know, for example, sprinting is very demanding. It's almost like a one rep max. Like, that's basically what I'm asking your body to do, is to recruit that much muscle and have that much force and output that there is a high potential of dramatic injury if we don't do it intelligently. So uphill is the caveat to what we're talking about here, right? Because why do I say sprinting, not just, you know, walking or jogging? Those are definitely useful things to do, highly recommend them. But sprinting is an incredible fast twitch fiber exercise, right? Tons of muscle potential, muscle growth potential, strength potential. The idea of recruiting fast twitch muscle fibers is kind of the key to that. And sprinting is phenomenal at doing that. Very posterior chain heavy, so lots of engagement to the glutes and the hamstrings and the core. So as you can see, there's a bit of a theme. A lot of these movements involve the posterior chain and the core and the trunk. Those are things that typically give out on people. That's where you see a lot of, you know, weakness and structural breakdown. And even from a lot of these movements that require the foot and the ankle, right? If you think about the glute ham raise, right? There's a lot of the plantar flexion and then the dorsiflexion on that movement. You look at the sleds, tons of ankle and footwork. Now the sprinting uphill, obviously we're seeing that theme quite heavy in this podcast so far. So sprinting uphill, love it. I have a trail group that I'm fortunate to have been running ever since COVID, basically 18 to 20 months now. A group of people a couple times a week, and we incorporate uphill sprinting, and knock on wood, no one's been injured, right? Had a couple of people going into workouts or classes, but never really hurting themselves from the sprints. Why? It's on a softer terrain. It's on an incline. The uphill slows the person down, obviously. So it makes it more challenging, but it's not as forceful, right? We're not asking the person to go full blast because the uphill's naturally going to slow them down. So I love incline running, which is why you can do this on a treadmill on an incline. And I would much more prefer you to do incline running on a treadmill than, you know, traditional sprinting. There's way less opportunity for injury. And like I said, uphill sprinting, so good for not only getting stronger, but improving your body composition, right? Burning off a ton of fat while not compromising precious muscle. And you're actually going to build muscle. So phenomenal exchange. Lose some fat, build some muscle, develop strength, get incredibly more resilient. And guess what? Running and sprinting, it's a human movement. It's a foundational human movement. If you can't sprint or you can't run because your body's not built for it anymore, that's a problem. And you should probably try to fix that. And slowly but surely, if you start adding things in like the glute ham raise and back extension that we talked about, start doing things like farmer carries and sleds, and say you're someone that can't sprint right now or run and hurt, guess what's going to happen? You're going to be able to take all those things, all those lessons and development that you had from those movements. You can definitely throw it into now doing some uphill sprinting, you know, once or twice a week, doing some sprint work uphill on an incline. My God, such an amazing, you know, transfer effect of all the things we talked about: muscle, fat loss, weight loss, you know, insulin sensitivity. I'm talking from a hormonal standpoint, getting stronger and keeping your body injury free. Like these are things, guys, that I take right out of my routine. I sprint a couple times a week uphill. Yes, I do tons of sled work, ton of farmer carries, lots of GHR and back extensions, and I deadlift, right? This is not something I'm just making up right now. And this is stuff that I've put into my clients' routines, lots of research on. So the science backs all these things up. And then the anecdotal evidence backs it up. So lots of research and transferable knowledge getting thrown to you guys today. So love sprinting uphill. So many benefits. Do it, guys. Do it. But like I said, use the other accessory work that we talked about from points 1 to 4 to help kind of work your way up to that if you are a little bit nervous. Because guess what? If you get really good at glute ham raises and back extensions and sled work, your hamstrings, your ankles, your feet, your hips, your core, and the glutes are going to be really good. They're going to be primed. They're going to be firing. And that's going to translate really well to some uphill sprint work. Okay, moving on to split squats. So this is one where I wanted to throw a squat in this because squatting is so important, obviously, right? It's a foundational movement pattern. But the reason I didn't put a squat into this is because there can be a lot of deficiencies and imbalances and weaknesses and structural mechanical breakdowns with the back squat. Now, it doesn't say you can't do that with the split squat, but because we're doing unilateral, one leg in front of the other in a split stance, now we're at least able to really highlight what's going on here. And we can use assistance. And we can now, like I said, isolate one side. I wouldn't say isolate, but we're going to dramatically encourage one side to be more stable than the other. And then we're going to switch it up and do the same thing for the other side. So we're going to be able to see what's going on way better. And we're going to be able to be a little bit more sound on what we're looking to highlight and what is a potential weakness. And split squats with 2 points of contact, right? 2 feet still on the ground is going to help us with stability. But like I said, it's going to really highlight if we do have any deficiencies. And squatting is something we should be able to do comfortably. It's incredibly beneficial in terms of building muscle for the glutes, hamstrings, and quads. So we want to be throwing squats and lunges into our routine, but we want to be mindful of how to do it appropriately and intelligently and get the most bang for our buck without being sidelined or injured. And if we have deficiencies and discrepancies, maybe a bilateral squat isn't the best thing to start with, right? Especially a back squat. That's kind of the most advanced, progressed version we'd love to get you to, but we want to do this in an intelligent manner. So split squats, love them. Recently, I've started incorporating safety bar split squats and even times where I use a safety bar, which allows me to kind of have a little bit more sound structure through the anterior core and support with the handles. I can even do it freehand and use assistance from the squat rack in front of me to really load up some decent weight, but work on or at least create an environment that's way more stable as well. So there's a lot of potential for people to manipulate and modify split squats where they have a lot of support, a lot of control, where they can do the movement well, get a lot stronger with it. Like, even if I took the most overweight, unathletic person and I was supporting them up and down on the split squat, I can at least have them do the movement. I can then see how one side differs from the other, and I can start highlighting things that we need to work on and isolate based on how they're performing the split squat. And there's going to be a much greater signal of, hey, this is a weak point, that's a strength, this side's a little bit, you know, wonky, work on this. It's going to highlight and give me a lot more feedback, which as a coach I would need. And for an individual looking in a mirror, they might have a better likelihood of finding something out that they didn't know beforehand and be like, wow, one side's way weaker. And anytime we're trying to prevent injuries, throwing in unilateral work is going to really help with that. You know, if we can isolate one side, or at least, you know, force a greater demand one side at a time, obviously we're going to have less opportunity of one side, one of the, you know, demanding or more overdeveloped sides to take over. And then we're going to really highlight each side on its own, which is going to give us greater likelihood of doing the movement properly, with really good mechanics and technique. And then we're going to really develop each side equally. And then you'll see that development take place. So that's why I love doing unilateral work. It really highlights potential weaknesses, and it allows us to increase strength side to side, left to right, up and down, without having a overly developed side or part of the body take over. So I absolutely love split squats. Traditionally, I love to keep people around that level one split squat, where we have just traditional split squat, 2 points of contact. So they have a lot more stability, a lot going on through the ankle as well, and pushing through, you know, plantar flexion of that rear foot, driving that lead foot through the ground, lots of stability through the glute and hip on that movement, and then a lot of manipulation in terms of, you want to emphasize the quad or hamstring. You're going to get both involved during a split squat, but you can actually highlight it towards your preference. So love the split squat, definitely one of the best exercises you can throw into your routine to help prevent injuries. And the final one we're going to talk about here is the glute bridge. Yes, the glute bridge. Everybody's favorite right now. Well, if you love training glutes, you love the glute bridge, you love the hip thrust. The reason I put glute bridge in instead of hip thrust, even though they're somewhat interchangeable, I think the hip thruster or the hip thrust has more potential of building the glutes up than a glute bridge, just for the simple fact of range of motion. And that's probably the main thing. I can load up glute bridges quite heavy. But I feel like the range of motion is just not that strong, in terms of it really doesn't do much from the eccentric lowering phase compared to a hip thrust. So I prefer the hip thrust in terms of building up the glutes. But in terms of injury prevention, a glute bridge, you can do this with a mini band above your knees. You can do that with resistant bands, you know, single leg glute bridges. You can do barbell glute bridges. You can just do body weight glute bridges with a mini band around the knees. So many different ways to do it and play around with it. And like I said, this is going to really help turn on the glutes. It's going to help you activate your glutes, build your glutes up, structurally, you know, build up the glute med, glute min, and glute max. And when the glutes are turned on and the core is really developed, you're going to notice a massive amount of transfer out of lower back taking over, right? When the lower back takes over on certain movements that it really shouldn't, it's typically built around underactivated, underdeveloped glutes and a weaker core. So if we can build up our core and we can build up a sound pair of glutes, it's going to really help us develop a structure where our lower back isn't being forced into these situations where it's taking over all the load, and it's completely having the assistance or the supporting muscles not do their job. So the glute bridge, such an easy one to do. I suggest this almost like as an everyday movement, right? Get to the ground, tuck your tailbone in, try to posterior pelvic tilt your hips and your pelvis, squeeze the shit out of your glutes, and develop them. Like, really work this movement. It's so beneficial, so easy, so simple, can be done anywhere. And we need to start really focusing on building the glutes up, building the posterior chain up. And I guarantee you that is going to keep you out of, or keep you in the gym and out of, keep you in the gym and out of the injury portal. Okay, that's where I was going with that. Even for guys, like I throw in hip thrusts and glute bridges in basically most of my clients' routines now because I know how beneficial it is in terms of the transfer over effect of athleticism and performing a deadlift properly and a squat properly. Like I don't want people deadlifting and squatting that often if they can't fire their glutes and they can't rely on their glutes to help them move weight, because now we're probably going to find ourselves in a position where our lower back takes over or that we break down mechanically. So we really want to make sure that that posterior chain and the biggest muscle in your body, the glutes, is firing appropriately. Hence why I love the glute bridges. And guess what? The glute ham raise and the back extension is going to help build up your glutes. The sleds are going to help build up your glutes. Sprinting up hills are going to help build up your glutes. Split squats are going to help build up your glutes. Deadlifts are going to build up your glutes. And even farmer carries. I could even argue that those are going to build up your glutes because there's so much trunk stabilization going on and lots of glute. And again, if you want to stabilize, you know, the knee, a lot of it's coming from the glute and the hip there. So incredibly beneficial exercises, guys, that we talked about today. But these are seven. Now, that doesn't mean there's not a ton more I could have gone over. But traditionally, in terms of preventing injuries, this is where we see a lot of injuries take place. And I know people have, you know, shoulder pains and stuff of that nature. I didn't throw in so many exercises. I only threw in the farmer carry that would probably give you the greatest likelihood of highlighting a little bit more shoulder stability, you know, with pulling the shoulders back and down and creating a little bit more strength into the upper back and the scapula. So that would have a transfer over effect. But there's plenty of other exercises we could have thrown in here to highlight, you know, better shoulder mobility and strengthening and whatnot. But traditionally, we see people sidelined with lower back issues, with, you know, ankle issues, knee issues, a lot that can be contributed to a very underdeveloped, underactivated posterior chain. So this is the stuff that I've noticed has had the greatest return on my athletic career, keeping me injury free, and knock on wood, and over the course of my like 20-year athletic career doing some really, you know, physically demanding high impact sports, I've stayed healthy, I've stayed durable, and I've stayed capable of doing the things I love to do and not being sidelined because, you know, mentally I love working out, I love exercising, I love doing the things I do, that I would hate to give up any of this stuff. So I really do my homework and due diligence on finding ways to bulletproof my body. And these exercises are just so spot on that we got to throw them into your routine weekly. And when you do this weekly, I guarantee you, you will not be sidelined as often and maybe not be sidelined again. But again, there's always that individual variance of how you perform the exercise and what else you're doing, right? I can only give you and prescribe so many exercises. You still got a lot of time on your hand to do whatever the hell you want. And who knows what that consists of and who knows what you're putting your body through, what you're asking your body to do. And if it's ready for it, I don't know. But these exercises are certainly going to help you in your pursuit of staying injury free and building up some good strength within your body. All right, guys, hope you enjoyed the episode. Like always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast, share the podcast with friends and family, and rate the podcast so we get a few more stars on the board. All right, guys, we'll see you on the next one.